Ever wondered why the United States became the world superpower while countries with larger populations or longer histories didn't? Peter Zeihan's provocative analysis in The Accidental Superpower argues that America's rise wasn't planned, but inevitable, the product of extraordinary geographic luck. This book has become required reading in diplomatic circles and military academies worldwide, with former Secretary of Defense James Mattis reportedly keeping a copy on his desk. Zeihan's background as Stratford's Vice President of Analysis lends weight to his controversial predictions, many of which, like Russia's aggressive expansion and Europe's fragmentation, have already begun materializing since the book's 2014 publication. Beyond academic circles, the book has influenced business leaders' international investment strategies and even prompted some wealthy individuals to reconsider citizenship options based on Zeihan's forecast of which nations will thrive in the coming disorder. Throughout human history, three fundamental factors have determined which nations rise to dominance: transport balance, easy internal movement with defensible borders, deep water navigation capabilities, and industrialization. The United States possesses the most favorable geography for all three, making its power accidental rather than planned. The economics of transportation explain why geography matters so profoundly. Moving goods by water is dramatically more efficient than by land. In the early 19th century, a horse pulling a barge could transport 30 tons compared to just 2,000 pounds with a cart. Modern comparisons show similar disparities. Container ships cost about 17 cents per container mile versus $2.40 for semi-trucks. When including infrastructure maintenance, $160 billion annually for U.S. interstate highways versus $2.7 billion for waterways, the practical ratio of road to water transport costs ranges from 40 to 1 to 71. Ancient Egypt demonstrates how geographic advantages create civilizational success. The Nile offered two unique benefits: perfect agricultural inputs, reliable water and highly fertile soil, and unparalleled security with impassable desert barriers. This combination created food surpluses and freed labor for irrigation expansion, military development, and civilizational advancements. More critically, the Nile created remarkable internal transportation efficiency. The pharaoh could literally cruise the river and visually inspect nearly his entire kingdom without setting foot on land. Yet Egypt's geographic isolation ultimately doomed it to stagnation. While the predictable flooding enabled agricultural success, it also created a slave-dependent society with centralized control focused on monument building rather than innovation. When outsiders eventually breached Egypt's desert barriers, they found a technologically backward society. Egypt's fate was sealed by its geography: easy internal transport, but nearly impossible external connections, the opposite of what creates sustained power. Few technologies fundamentally alter how humans interact with geography. Sedentary agriculture was one such transformation, allowing settlement and civilization. For five millennia after, innovations improved but didn't revolutionize human existence, until two technological packages emerged in the past 500 years that radically altered the human condition. The first revolution came through deep water navigation. Before 1400, ocean transport was dangerous and limited by the need to keep land in sight. The Ottoman Empire nearly achieved European hegemony by controlling enclosed seas and the massive Danube River. From Istanbul, they monopolized all trade between Europe and Asia, especially the lucrative Silk Road spice trade. The Ottomans came within one battle of conquering Europe at Vienna in 1529, but failed because the world was already changing. Several innovations made ocean shipping safer and more reliable. The dry compass allowed navigation during cloudy conditions. The cross staff enabled latitude determination. Carvel shipbuilding created lighter, faster vessels. And gun ports allowed ships to mount many more weapons. These technologies were primarily developed by the Portuguese and Spanish peoples from Iberia, Europe's poorest region with limited coastal access. The English, forged in the dangerous North Sea, applied these technologies to create an unmatched naval advantage. Their maritime acumen allowed them to switch trade partners at will, land forces strategically, and become Europe's ally of choice. Between 1600 to 1800, England seized control of the global trade network, establishing colonies from Africa to Asia. The Deepwater Revolution transformed oceans from barriers into highways, launching the Age of Discovery and creating a truly global economy. The Second Revolution, industrialization, broke the ancient limitations of muscle, wind, and water power. The first successful steam engine, 1712, enabled deeper coal mining, creating a virtuous cycle as more coal powered better engines. By 1805, industrial breakthroughs had matured. High-volume steel production enabled railroads and steel ships, steam engines became compact enough for locomotives and vessels, and artificial waterways could be built anywhere flat enough for rail. Chemical innovations enabled everything from fertilizers to construction materials, expanding farmland and increasing yields. Steel-reinforced cement enabled multi-story buildings, bridges, and sewers, allowing cities to grow without becoming disease-ridden. Germany's industrialization happened much faster than England's, completed in less than 40 years versus England's 150. With hyper-competent governments, including industrialists in cabinets, Germany directed capital with ruthless efficiency towards strategic priorities. Germany uniquely applied industrial technologies to warfare, requiring college degrees for military commissions and creating the general staff system that fused expertise across government, academia, industry, and finance. Most significantly, industrialization unified Germans as never before, transforming them from some of Europe's poorest people to its richest in a single generation. Where did America's superpower status originate? While the United States inherited excellent lands at low cost, enjoyed natural barriers from rivals, and benefited from European distraction, these advantages are secondary to one overwhelming factor: its unparalleled waterway network. The Mississippi River alone, navigable for 2,100 miles, is one-third longer than the Danube and triple the Rhine's length. Combined with 11 other major navigable rivers and the 3,000-mile intercoastal waterway, America possesses 17,600 miles of internal waterways, more than the rest of the planet combined. Most critically, these waterways form an interconnected network, creating the world's greatest concentration of capital generation opportunities. America's geography provides additional advantages beyond its waterways. The Cumberland Narrows require just 130 miles of planking to connect the eastern seaboard to the Mississippi Basin, a stark contrast to the thousands of miles of infrastructure Germans needed to forge their unified state. Approximately two-thirds of the lower 48 is easily accessible, with about 90% within 150 miles of navigable water. The greater Midwest represents the largest contiguous stretch of high-quality farmland globally, producing billions of bushels of wheat, soybeans, and corn annually. Most critically, America's world-class waterways perfectly overlay its agricultural lands. America's productive heartland enjoys unparalleled physical security through four defensive layers. First, local geography creates formidable buffer zones with neighbors. The U.S.-Mexico border region consists of deserts and highlands with no good Mexican staging locations within 500 miles. The U.S.-Canada border features mountains and forests in the east, the Rockies in the west, and only the Prairie Midwest connection offers easy passage, which favors American power projection rather than threatening it. Second, neither Mexico nor Canada possesses the geographical unity to threaten the United States. Mexico's mountainous terrain creates a patchwork of disconnected regions rather than a cohesive state, while Canada is split into five distinct geographical zones that more easily integrate with the United States than with each other. The oceans provide America's third layer of security, isolating it from the populous regions of Europe and Asia. Following the War of 1812, America systematically secured all potential approaches to its territory through strategic acquisitions that not only made America immune to extra-hemispheric invasion, but also provided launching points for American power projection into Europe and Asia. The fourth layer is the absence of potential invaders. Invading North America would require three prerequisites that no nation possesses: a massive population to challenge 300 plus million Americans on their home territory, the industrial and technological capacity to build and sail an invasion fleet halfway around the world, and the strategic freedom to develop naval power without land border concerns. America's geography makes it the ultimate maritime power, surpassing even Britain's historical naval dominance. The United States possesses more port potential than the rest of the world combined. Puget Sound, San Francisco Bay, and Chesapeake Bay represent the world's three largest and best natural harbors, with Chesapeake Bay alone offering more prime port property than Asia's entire coast from Vladivostok to Lahore. For the United States, the Bretton Woods system, established after World War II, has always been a strategic tool rather than an economic necessity. The American commitment to maintaining this expensive system, protecting global shipping, providing market access, and enabling free capital movement, was justified during superpower competition with the Soviet Union. But with Russia now a pale shadow of its former threat, containing contemporary Russia requires no global network. The costs of maintaining free trade are substantial. Cold War defense spending regularly topped 5% of GDP, twice the ratio of allies. The Navy costs $150 billion annually, plus $30 billion for Marines. And the American trade deficit ballooned to $700 billion at its peak. These costs were justifiable during superpower competition, but with the Soviet collapse in 1992, the strategic benefits have diminished while economic costs continue. The looming crisis is straightforward. Everything underpinning the global economy depends on America's commitment to Bretton Woods. But without strategic benefits and facing ongoing economic costs, at some point the Americans will reprioritize, ending the free trade order. And this is just the first of three imminent convulsions that will tear apart the global order. The second convulsion is demographic. The 2000s saw an enormous capital flood as baby boomers matured into their peak saving years, generating trillions in retirement investments. With smaller Generation X unable to absorb all this credit, capital costs plummeted to historic lows and surplus money spilled globally. This demographic windfall created bubbles across all sectors. But as boomers retire, they'll shift from contributing to withdrawing, transforming the entire financial sector. The fiscal battles of recent years will persist for at least 15 years as government staggers under pension and healthcare costs while the tax base shrinks. For Americans, demographic inversion is only temporary. As a settler society, the United States can more easily assimilate immigrants because nationality and government aren't inextricably linked. Most importantly, behind Gen X is Gen Y, the boomers' kids, 35% more numerous than the Xers. By 2030, the oldest boomers will be passing on, relieving financial commitments. Gen Xers will become manageable retirees, and Gen Y will be serious capital contributors. While American capital costs will normalize by 2040, the rest of the developed world faces permanent recession with no generational replacement coming. The third convulsion is energy. The shale revolution combines horizontal drilling with hydraulic fracturing to access vast petroleum reserves trapped in non-porous rock formations. By 2014, the United States had become the world's largest energy producer, outproducing both Saudi Arabia in oil and Russia in natural gas. North American energy independence by 2020 is now a conservative estimate. We are already in the shale era. Shale energy delivers numerous benefits beyond job creation. Environmentally, natural gas burns significantly cleaner than other fossil fuels, releasing one-third less carbon than oil and half that of coal. The price impact has been equally dramatic. Domestic oil prices have dropped $10 to $15 per barrel compared to global markets, saving American consumers roughly $100 million daily. Perhaps most importantly, shale energy enhances national security by making the U.S. immune to foreign supply disruptions. The unprecedented prosperity of the last 70 years is temporary, but not quite over yet. Until around 2020, when the majority of 200 million developed world boomers retire, we'll experience an insanely capital-rich system with increased demand for everything from commodities to manufactured goods. This period of surfing the peak offers unprecedented technological advancement and economic opportunity. But from such unprecedented heights, there's nowhere to go but down. The global financial wave will crest between 2020 and 2024. By 2019, Poland and Russia will join Japan in demographic decline. Between 2020-2024, 13 of the world's top 25 economies, including Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, South Korea, Switzerland, the UK, and the US, will become financially distressed. With over 90% of the developed world in demographic decline, the availability of capital and credit will plummet. As global disorder increases, America will progressively lose interest in guaranteeing global energy security and trade networks. The United States won't merely lose interest in global energy security, it will lose interest in global energy altogether. With North American energy self-sufficiency through shale, Canadian, and Mexican resources, plus America's agricultural dominance, the continent will remain comfortable while the rest of the world struggles. Without global needs or interests, there's no reason for America to impose a global order. American disengagement will be the norm. Trade links will wither, global shipping will go unprotected, and alliances will atrophy. Countries accustomed to American protection will struggle to secure their borders and economies, while others will find themselves free to act against neighbors. Beyond a few strategic allies, America will interact with the world primarily through special forces and its navy, launching discrete attacks against perceived threats. Few countries exist in geopolitical vacuums. Most interact constantly with powers larger, smaller, and peer. Germany and its European pond represent a particularly complex case that portends a messy future as American influence recedes. Europe's geography creates inherent contrasts and conflicts. The North European plain stretches 1,500 miles from the Pyrenees to Belarus, never exceeding 300 miles in width. This narrow coastal plain supports dense populations through lush agriculture and navigable rivers like the Seine, Rhine, Elbe, and Vistula. The plain's lack of natural barriers between river valleys forces constant interaction between neighboring peoples. Every country's heartland is their neighbor's borderland. This geographic reality has sparked some of history's most infamous wars as nations compete for security. The Europe we know today was utterly transformed by Bretton Woods. Instead of struggling for resources and borders, France and West Germany could cooperate economically and focus on exports. Europeans enjoyed a vacation from geopolitics and their own brutal history, resulting in 70 years of peace and prosperity. But Europe now faces seven interconnected problems that threaten this stability. First, the Euro currency union was fundamentally flawed from inception. Unlike the United States, where finance is non-denominational and capital flows freely between regions, Europe's financial systems remained fundamentally national even after currency unification. Currency unity allowed northern capital to flow south at artificially low interest rates, while northern exporters gained unrestricted access to southern markets. This created mountains of southern debt while simultaneously hollowing out southern economies, making repayment impossible. Second, European banking suffers from its status as a national prerogative rather than a purely commercial enterprise. Banks must balance national directives above corporate decision-making. During recessions, European banks prioritize government financing over business lending, severely limiting economic recovery potential. Third, the Franco-German relationship that underpinned European integration has broken down. France wants to maintain the old system, German money supporting French control. This Franco-German disconnect has paralyzed EU governance since 2007. Fourth, Europe faces a perfect storm of economic challenges. Germany's investment and export-led economy thrived in the 2000s when southern Europeans accessed German credit to purchase German goods. Now that system has collapsed. By 2024, Germany's current tax-paying population bulge will retire en masse, evaporating the country's competitiveness, exports, and bailout capacity. Fifth, without American guarantees of Bretton Woods, Germany faces catastrophe. Nearly half of German GDP depends on exports, with 16% requiring open sea lanes and American protection. Faced with such existential threats, German organizational acumen will not remain idle. The same concerns drove the last six German-initiated wars. Sixth, Europe faces pressure from two awakening neighbors, Turkey and Russia. Turkey, after a decade of disappointing Middle Eastern involvement, will likely turn toward the Balkans, its historical Ottoman heartland. Russia faces demographic time pressure. It must act before 2022 or lose both military and economic capacity. Seventh, the countries between Germany and Russia will determine Europe's future. Poland, positioned where the North European plain transitions into the Eurasian hordelands, will determine Russia's success in re-establishing control between the Baltic and the Carpathians. A Swedish-Polish alliance would combine Sweden's advanced maritime technology with Poland's modernizing industrial power. However, with only 10 million Swedes supporting 40 million Poles against 80 million Germans and 140 million Russians, Poland needs American involvement.
Most people view China as the future world leader, the largest by population, largest exporter, and supposedly soon to be largest economy and military power. Yet this perspective fails to question why China's dominance is emerging only now, after 3,500 years of Han Chinese existence. The reality differs dramatically from conventional wisdom, with geographic and demographic factors that could derail China's rise and return it to its historically fractured state. The Han Chinese originated along the flood-prone Yellow River in northern China. Unlike the contained Nile, the Yellow River flows through a broad, flat floodplain, causing extensive flooding. This geographic reality shaped Chinese society differently from Western civilizations. Instead of managing food surpluses, Chinese political development centered on controlling the river's destructive power. This reality necessitates extremely tight governmental control. Central China's mighty Yangtze River boasts 9,000 miles of interconnected waterways, seemingly comparable to America's Mississippi system. However, this doesn't make China a potential superpower. The Yangtze is China's only navigable river, making central China naturally trade-focused and capital-rich, but isolated from the rest of the country. Southern China exists as a world apart from the north, characterized by hills and mountains. This rugged landscape prevents political unity and wealth accumulation, similar to Mexico or the Balkans. Modern unified China exists because of three American actions. First, Americans removed Japan as a threat by defeating them in WW2 and forcing their withdrawal from occupied Chinese territories. Second, WW2's conclusion changed the naval balance of power, eliminating both Japanese and European naval presences that had carved up China for centuries. Third, China's inclusion in the Bretton Woods system starting in the 1970s gave it access to global markets as a producer rather than just a target market. China faces three system-killing problems. First, its financial system creates massive economic distortions, with subsidized prices for finished goods, allowing exports to undercut global competition. Second, China's one-child policy worked too well, creating rapid aging without adequate social security. Third, China remains dependent on the Bretton Woods system that made everything about modern China possible. China's collapse will trigger four major global outcomes. First, a production vacuum in low and mid-skilled manufacturing that countries like Mexico and Southeast Asia will struggle to fill, causing price increases worldwide. Second, demand for industrial commodities will plummet, devastating producers in Brazil and Africa while favoring lower-cost suppliers with better U.S. relations. Third, food imports to coastal China may actually increase as the financial system's collapse damages domestic agricultural production. Finally, throughout this transition, U.S. dollar-denominated assets will become increasingly popular safe havens. The period from 2015 through 2030 represents merely a transition phase as the Cold War order finally dissolves, setting the stage for something extraordinary, the American Age. During this 15-year Hobsonian period, much of the world will tear itself apart fighting over the scraps of the previous system through resource wars, market wars, and naval competition. New technologies like drones, autonomous weapons, and cyber warfare capabilities will allow even demographically challenged countries to lash out with unprecedented reach and impact. Regional powers like Iran, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia will vie for influence, while established powers like Russia will struggle to maintain their spheres of control. Meanwhile, Americans will experience moderate but steady growth, benefiting from stable markets, reliable energy supplies, and a robust internal consumer economy. The shale revolution will transform the United States into an energy superpower, providing both energy independence and significant export opportunities. By 2030, America will emerge inordinately stronger, while others struggle with aging populations, resource depletion, and political instability. The country's geographic advantages, including abundant farmland, navigable rivers, and protected borders, will prove increasingly valuable in an unstable world. By 2040, America's demographic challenges will largely resolve as the baby boomers pass and Generation Y enters their peak earning years, healing government finances through increased tax revenues and reduced healthcare costs. The millennial generation will drive technological innovation and economic growth, while immigration continues to refresh the workforce. In contrast, many developing nations will face the demographic decline Europe experienced a generation earlier, with China already deep in demographic crisis, struggling with an aging population, shrinking workforce, and the consequences of its one-child policy. The Americans need do nothing special to ensure this outcome. Geography has given them everything they need, while demographics and shale energy take care of the rest. The country's natural resources, including the world's largest freshwater system, vast agricultural lands, and diverse mineral deposits, provide unprecedented security. As the world descends into chaos, the United States will find itself in the enviable position of choosing when and where to engage, with the luxury of focusing primarily on its own development while selectively maintaining relationships with a small circle of strategic allies, likely including Canada, the UK, and Australia. The American age won't be marked by global hegemony like the post-World War era, but rather by American exceptionalism in a world where most other nations struggle with fundamental challenges to their very existence. This won't mean isolation. America will remain engaged in global trade and diplomacy, but it will exercise unprecedented selectivity in its international commitments, focusing on maintaining key sea lanes, protecting vital allies, and ensuring access to strategic resources while letting many regional conflicts play out without direct intervention. The American age won't be marked by global hegemony like the post-World War II era, but rather by American exceptionalism in a world where most other nations struggle with fundamental challenges to their very existence. This won't mean isolation. America will remain engaged in global trade and diplomacy, but it will exercise unprecedented selectivity in its international commitments, focusing on maintaining key sea lanes, protecting vital allies, and ensuring access to strategic resources while letting many regional conflicts play out without direct intervention.
The American age won't be marked by global hegemony like the post-WW2 era, but rather by American exceptionalism in a world where most other nations struggle with fundamental challenges to their very existence. This won't mean isolation. America will remain engaged in global trade and diplomacy, but it will exercise unprecedented selectivity in its international commitments, focusing on maintaining key sea lanes, protecting vital allies, and ensuring access to strategic resources while letting many regional conflicts play out without direct intervention.